Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Come on in, everybody. Welcome to Vox Pop. It's Thursday, September 4th. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are champing at the bit right now. You can hardly keep them away. Just a moment and you can all come in. It's gardening. Greg Ward from... Here they come. From Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia, Bob from Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves from Fadigan's, Dale Eiler from the Berry Patch. Yes, come on in. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We had a CEO here for a number of years who would do that every time the red light was on, and he worked in radio. So you don't work in radio, so I'll cut you some slack. If you have a gardening question, voxpop@wamc.org or call 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop. Our gardeners have been sitting here for some time now, and they're ready for your calls. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward is the head honcho at Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Mass. Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. We welcome all your calls right now. Get in line. This is a popular one. 800, as opposed to most of my other shows. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you have a gardening question. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Mr. Breglia, what's happening?
Hey, you know, we're gearing up for a plant sale coming up this weekend.
At the Landis, yeah?
So,
yep, tell me.
You know, we do two big plant sales a year. The fall plant sale's coming up quick. Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. No admission charges to come in, and we're going to have a ton of plants available. If you are a member of the Arboretum, you can come the day before on Friday from 4 to 6 p.m., and if you're not a member, you can come on Friday as well and join at the gate, and
cool.
You can pre-shop. But otherwise, we're going to have a ton of stuff available through the weekend. So really excited to put the show on, and we got a lot of plans ready for y'all.
Are you going to play some music in the background? Are you going to play that guitar of yours there, boy?
I don't think I'm going to have time this weekend, but you know, after this is all over, I'm planning to take a few days off, and guitar is one of the top of the charts. So.
Bob Graves, the Fadigans, how are you, sir?
Hey, it has turned to fall. The 90-degree weather has gone by, hopefully.
I was just out taking the air, and it was about 80-something.
It's pretty warm out there today.
It was pretty warm today.
Yeah. It's better than it has been. We need a little rain, though. It's awful, awful dry.
How are things over at Fadigan's?
We're gearing up.
For what?
All the fall
Christmas?
Plants. Mums and pumpkins and cabbages.
Do you grow your own pumpkins over there?
No, we don't grow anything.
Really?
Well, trees and shrubs. We don't grow vegetables.
Interesting. Now I see. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, Zach, you're correct. Bob is on mic 6. I saw it go on. Bob grabbed another mic. He's got a couple. He's like Paul and George in the Beatles right
he's
now.
He's got two mics. Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah, you're good, man. You're on mic 6. It's all good.
He's in stereo.
Great. This show has been so far, it's just been bizarre. Greg Ward, how are things at Ward's Nursery? Good to have you back.
Yeah, really great. You know, fall is just about here,
but
it's really a great time to look at things that are sort of late summer blooming things. So ferns are really looking amazing. Certainly all of the late color, the asters and things are coming in. So it's actually a really great time to add to the garden. Especially any of those perennial holes you want to fill.
Yeah.
And then, as Bob said, don't forget to water. It's been a little dry.
Oh, yes, it has.
And things, especially your annual containers, maybe some of your vegetable crops that are still kind of just coming in. I have a second batch of green beans.
Congrats.
Yeah, Herkivore or whatever you say. I don't know how to say
Herkivore?
That.
Herkivore? Wasn't he on Fantasy Island?
He was.
The little guy?
Yeah.
This show's deteriorating even more.
Anyway, so those kinds of things definitely need a little irrigation to just keep them going. Let them
it's been dry. It's been really dry.
You know, it occurs to me, and I mentioned this just now to you, Bob, and I'll ask you both, Greg and Bob, When do you guys roll out the Christmas stuff? It's always one of my favorite times to go to a nursery.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. We have one in Glenmont that we go to, and they deck it out, and my wife goes in, and we'll get our tree, and we'll walk around.
Long.
Inside. Believe it or not, it's around the 1st of November.
No kidding.
A little early, it feels like, but it takes a while to get it ready,
That's
so we want to be ready.
You know, people come in October and say, why are you setting up Christmas? Well, it takes us a month to do it.
Yeah. I've seen some Halloween stuff set up weeks ago.
Don't get me started on Halloween. My wife and daughters, we're setting up for Halloween. I said, it's September 2nd. What are you doing?
Yeah, my kids love Halloween, too. They're ready. They're ready to go.
Delilah Riggs, I have one thing to say to you. We had a few chunks of one of those melons after the last show 2 weeks ago when I brought them home. My family went so crazy over them. What was that melon?
That melon was the Tuscan melon called Orangina. It's the one, it had some kind of stripes on it.
Yeah.
And a little bit firmer than a regular cantaloupe.
So good.
They are really, really good.
Delightful.
Yes, they are.
How are things at the berry patch?
They're good. We're starting to wind down a number of our crops, but we still have melons. We'll still have melons for about another probably month because we have a late planting in one of our unheated greenhouses that hasn't yet started to come in. We now have every type of melon that we grow is ripe. We've got watermelon and canary melon in addition to the cantaloupes and the Christmas melons that we had last time. And these warm days and cool nights are absolutely perfect for fantastic flavor development.
Now, let me ask you about flavor development. Now, we were given very late in the season, our next door neighbor gave us a few just cherry tomato or plum tomato plants, and we got one. It was, you know, about the size of a golf ball, and we sliced it up and salted it. It was delicious. But now there are three more coming. Is it too cold for these to ripen now, you think?
Oh, no, not at all.
No?
No.
They'll be all right?
They'll have really nice sugar content. Mm. This is the orchardist. The apple growers are in seventh heaven right now because of these warm days and cool nights. You get the most intense color development and most intense flavor.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the cool nights that bring the sugar out?
Yes. It's that contrast.
Contrast.
Yes.
Change. Ah, interesting.
Yep. And it does look to be like a pretty good apple year, too, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
A lot of the orchards are looking pretty good right now.
Yep. If they didn't, most of the varieties made it through the really cold winter. A few varieties got a little bit damaged. But, yeah, big apple crop. And just mentioning the dryness, this is a really good time of year for people to think about irrigation systems for next year and get out there and kind of look and think about how they could put in a drip irrigation system for next year because that's what will make your plants grow the
happy,
absolute
happy,
best.
Happy, happy, happy. All right, this email came in from Nick earlier today. It's all about poison ivy. Nick writes, it's got three leaves. The outer ones have a mitten edge, while the middle one has symmetrical edges. There are no thorns on any part of it. If you touch it, wash quickly with soap and cold water. As with working in a restaurant, never touch your face while gardening. Well, is this a question, Nick? That's the basic stuff to know to avoid a world of itchy. But my arms are scratch pads, and I think it's because sulfur water at one lady's house doesn't wash the oils off the same way. Is that true? Does sulfur water not?
Well, you know, you definitely need a soap that cuts oil. And they do make poison ivy washes. So I think that if you got the poison ivy wash and you put it with sulfur water. I mean, we've got sulfur water at the Arboretum, and we've covered in poison ivy a lot of times.
It may be the sulfur that's irritating, but not the combination.
Yeah, we've had no luck with it. I mean,
patch
great
of juniper he was weeding. It could have been
juniper
separate,
will make
just some irritation from some plants.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you are gardening, you do get all kinds of
even geraniums.
Things just touch you. Yep, even rue sometimes has gotten me before.
You know, if you know you're in a poison ivy patch and you're weeding it, you definitely should wash your clothes, take a shower, and you know there are products. There's a thing. Can I mention a brand name?
I suppose.
Okay, it's called Tech New.
Yep.
And it's
prices.
Several. Oh, I have no idea what it costs.
Okay.
But it's several variations on a theme, but it's very effective, and you should just follow the directions and clean yourself up.
Yep. Another one that also works is not going to mention a brand, but like the Mechanic soap. So it isn't so much always that has like pumice.
Yeah,
in it,
and
like whatever they are, the orange scented stuff. But
you
that stuff cuts
really
grease for Mechanics.
Poison ivy,
it cuts
don't
it right
do
off.
It. Just stay out of there. My wife looks at it and gets poison ivy.
That's the thing. I talked to somebody years ago who said I was on a bike ride on a trail, and I didn't touch any, and I got poison ivy. Is it possible?
Well,
I don't know, but it seems like it.
It seems like it, but it's not possible. Now you have to make contact. So, yeah. But the thing is, like, the bike tires ended up, you know, getting on the poison ivy, and you touch the bike tires, if the dog goes through poison ivy.
Yeah. I even have a relative who was wearing shorts and using a weed whacker, and his legs just
blossomed. Oh, yeah, that'll get you really bad. But I will point out that it's not not necessarily a bad plant in the environment.
Is it native?
It's become native. Did it originally come from here?
How can you become native?
Oh, no, no. It's always been here.
Okay. Yeah.
Definitely always been here. It is definitely the warmer weather that we're getting, the warmer, drier weather. It's really beautiful fall color.
And it's
excellent
a good
fall color.
And good for wildlife.
Yeah, the fruit is heavy in oils, which obviously are toxic to us, but not to birds and birds. Yep.
And virtually every mammal can eat it and
but not
use
us.
It. But we're the only ones that show the and it's a reaction in terms of the actual we're not like animals are immune to it. But we're not.
Here's a question.
And not everybody gets it.
That was my question.
Yep.
Are some people... I've never gotten poison ivy, to my knowledge.
I have never gotten it, and I've worked in weeds all my life.
And my dad never got it. And so they do say about, I think it's about 8% of the population
is
more or less
special.
Immune to poison ivy. Now, some people, be warned, if you think you're immune... and then all of a sudden you're exposed again.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can
it
grow
can
in
change.
And out of immunity, but there is a small percentage of the population that's truly immune. My dad, when I was in college, I would be doing woody plant identification, and he'd be like, "Fred, can you tell me what this one is?" He'd pick it right up, and I'm like, "Whoa!" So he never got it.
All right. So this email from Barbara, who says, "We've got a trumpet vine, been here about 20 years, but for the last few years, it's been sending up shooting all around our lawn and other parts of the garden. Is there anything we can do to stop this besides just pulling them out and mowing them down?"
Nope.
It's kind of common when you have a trumpet vine. You
just
know,
keep mowing it and mowing it and mowing it, cutting it down.
Yep. If you see the shoots when you cut them, you can cut them down below grade. I find that sort of slows them down a tad bit more.
One of the books I read one time said, when you plant a trumpet vine, keep your feet moving because it'll grow
it'll
up
get
your
you.
Leg.
Yep. They not as bad as kudzu, but.
Wow. Okay. So Laurel and John also had the same exact question. So there you go. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. When we come back from the break, I'm going to have our guests walk in the studio as the light goes on. Just for old time's sake, we'll do more gardening in a moment. Charlie Parker there on Vox Pop. And just a quick shout out to our underwriters. You are fabulous, and you are one of the reasons we can keep going. And so many of our underwriters have been with us so many years. And so just a moment to just acknowledge the fact that we can't do it without you, and thanks a lot. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's gardening. Dale Isla, as always, brings delicious things to try. Let's grab a call, and then we'll sample some stuff. Sharon in Carroll, New York. Hey, Sharon, I apologize for my ignorance, but where is Carroll, New York?
Cairo.
Oh, I know where that is.
To Windham Mountain.
Yeah, it was just a typo on the screen here. I know where that is. All right, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank all of you there for sharing your knowledge with all of us neophytes out here. And we learned so much from you. But my question today is, I have two old established lilac bushes. I've had them for years and years and years. And I always get a bit of the... mildew on them, you know, the
powdery mildew
during the latter part of summer, especially if it's humid and so forth. In the spring, after they finished blooming, I did the regular trimming, and plus I took a little bit extra off because they were getting kind of wild, and everything was fine. But now my lilac bushes are totally bare. The leaves went totally black and are gone. Is there anything I should be doing at this time of year to try to help them for next year?
I think we've had that question every show for the last month.
Yeah. It's a really bad year. It's so the short answer is not much you're going to do right now. The plants will come back in most cases, look completely fine next spring. Last year is kind of similar to this year. We had a wet spring followed by humid conditions. So even though we were dry, the air had a lot of moisture, and it kept those fungus diseases that started in the spring rolling.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's not the powdery mildew that's the fungus this time of year, right?
You would normally see powdery mildew if you had leaves.
The leaves are gone.
If you had leaves, right. But the foliator is not powdery mildew, no. And it's
just a really wet spring and a lot of humidity.
Yep, and this year is just, you know, I got to say, I don't think I've seen any lilacs anywhere I've traveled look good. And it's not only lilacs, the same thing is happening to maples. Same thing is happening to especially crab apples. And it's not the same disease. They are all fungal diseases. But in the case of these plants, they're all going to end up probably, for the most part, unless there's an underlying condition, coming back looking good next spring.
All right, Sharon, you want to follow up?
I cleaned up well around the bushes and like that, and just spray them early of the season next year with a fungicide of some type, or a neem oil.
You've got to use a fungicide before you see any problems. They're preventatives. They're not eradicants. So, yeah, if you do want to do it, and they're organic form. Sulfur would be an organic form. Copper would be an organic form.
Good. Okay. Well, I'll do that. And I don't have to worry about my maples because the spongy worm got them early on this year.
Oh, boy. All right, Greg.
I'm pretty sure like a copper-based fungicide pre-flowering, so something you would do in early April, maybe mid-April, depending, would be fine. And then you could consider a second application post-bloom, so 1st of June or so.
Hmm. Delilah.
Okay, so about the same type of schedule as I use for my apple trees and like that?
Mm-hmm. Yep, pretty much.
Yep.
Yeah. Delilah.
Okay. Yeah, so I think the thing for people to remember is it's the wet springs that are causing the problem. We always, in plant pathology, we always talk about the disease triangle, and you need to have a host, and you need to have a disease, and you need to have the right environment. And the right environment for fungal diseases is moisture so that the spores can germinate.
Yeah.
So if we have a dry spring, you might have the host, your lilac, and you might have the pathogen, the fungi. But if it's a dry spring, it's not going to be nearly as much of a problem.
But will it hang around till next year then?
Depends on the fungus. You know, that's where cleaning up the leaves and getting them off site is always helpful. But there's so... Lilacs are so ubiquitous, and this fungal disease is so ubiquitous. It'll probably always get blown in from somewhere. But if we have a dry spring, that's when we have a lot less disease problems.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joanne in Queensbury very quickly here because she's been waiting about 25 minutes, and then we'll talk about these delicious-looking melons. Joanne, you're on.
Yes. Hi, this is Joanne.
Okay, good.
Okay. I want to talk about my raspberries. They're the fall heritage raspberries, full of bees, but they're eating the tops of the raspberries off a third of the way down, the tips of the raspberries. They're eating them off, the bees.
Huh.
So are they actually bees or are they, it sounds to me like they might be yellow jackets. Do you know how to tell the difference?
They're a little bit smaller. They're like a miniature yellow jacket. Yes.
Yeah. So there's a couple different species of yellow jackets wasps that absolutely love fruit at this time of year. You have to be really careful when you're out there harvesting. I don't know. Are there still yellow jacket traps available that you can buy?
Yeah.
So I think putting out some yellow jacket traps might help. The other thing is just go out there early in the morning and late in the evening when it's cool, and they're going to be much less likely to be active then.
Could you consider some row cover kind of right now?
Some exclusion netting or row cover would be good. Unless you have it anchored at the ends, they often will still find their way in there because they do love that fresh fruit.
They were going up the sleeves of my long sleeve shirt.
Ouch.
Very aggressive.
Yeah. So I would just be out there.
Biting me. I have a couple of welts on me there. It's not just a minor bite. I think they're trying to tell me to get out of that patch because it's theirs.
Oh,
yeah, and that's where being out there first thing in the morning and late in the evening when it's a lot cooler, they're not nearly as active then.
Okay. Joanne, good luck, and I'm sorry about the welts. You know, this brings up a kind of an ethical thing, right? These are pollinators, aren't they? don't we want to keep them?
Yeah. They do have a role in pollination, yep.
I mean, how do you handle that? You said there were traps. What's a trap look like?
Something they go, you put something in there that attracts them, fruity-ish,
yeah.
And then they go in there and they can't get out. But the amount that you would collect with that would be minuscule compared to the overall pollinator population.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, what I try to do is leave a lot of my fields until they really die off so that the pollinators can get at the, you know, the goldenrod and the other things that are really blue. I mean, there's a lot out there for pollinators right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what we do at the Arboretum, too. Just our fields are left all
let them go
kind
for
of
a while.
I mean, it's like you say, goldenrod's such a good one, and just a bunch of other plants, and just let them all go, and we don't do anything with them until, like, really late.
They die off, then you mow them down with a brush.
Yeah, like November. Yeah. We're in November with this.
Yeah, November. Yeah. November's a nice time.
Cause it's a good time to do it.
It's cooler.
And it's less of the green, lush vegetation. It's easier for the brush hog.
Yeah. Yeah, brush, work on yeah this dries up, it's easier for it. Gets a little dusty.
And less chance of getting a ground nest, right?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you that
they're
story
fun
someday.
Too,
they're fun.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They,
so, but I mean,
by November, they're gone, those ground nests. So
Joanne had it pretty bad, though, if they're crawling under the sleeves of her shirt.
I was at a commercial job when I was younger, and when ground bees went up my pant leg. I was outside the office windows, but I had to take my pants off because I couldn't get rid of them.
Well, check, please. The number here is 800-348-2551. All right, before we go.
Oh, boy. Oh,
sorry.
Gadzooks. What has happened? Is it in the water today?
Right. You haven't had the melon yet, so we can't blame that.
Try not to visualize.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about the melons because not only did Dale Isle of the Rigs bring melons, she brought China. This is a new thing. This is all right.
Yeah, well, you can thank my husband for that.
Really?
Do you need plates? And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. And I hear this clank, clank, clank.
I can usually rustle up some plates here, but you know, if you want to bring your own, fine.
Hey, this is a classy show, man.
Is
that's
it?
Right.
It is.
When did that start?
That's why we have plastic forks.
Yeah, next time.
All right, what did we bring?
So there's some canary melon, and a canary melon, people are often asking what it's like.
Yeah.
And it's nothing like a cantaloupe. I'm going to see if you guys can describe it better for people. I just say that it's sweet and delicious. Creamy.
This is the one, the pale one?
Yep, creamy colored flesh.
It's nothing like a cantaloupe.
Nothing like a cantaloupe whatsoever.
And I got two.
It's a canary melon, and just think of Tweety Bird, the color yellow,
it
because
sure is.
That's what the color of the melon is like.
Yep, a little bit like a little bit like a honeydew, maybe slight.
I love this.
It's a really good one.
It's really good.
Definitely different than a honeydew, and I'm not a big fan of honeydew.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I am a big fan of this.
I do not like honeydew at all.
I don't either.
So I don't compare any melons to honeydew.
It has
honeydew.
A lightness, like a cucumber lightness to it.
I agree.
The flesh is like a cucumber sort of color.
So do you grow honeydew at the berry patch?
I do not.
So you're that much against
it? I am, and
honeydews need a much longer season than what we can usually have in upstate New York.
Okay.
Yeah, to be good.
Well, that was fantastic. Let's go back to our phone lines at 800-348-2551. It's Gardening with Dale Isle of Rigs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. And we'll go to Monterey, Massachusetts. Kit, you're up.
Hey there. I have a question about cutworms.
Okay.
The little devils are chewing up my Swiss chard and my beets.
Oh, boy. What's a cutworm?
So a cutworm is a soil-dwelling insect that it's the larval stage of, I don't remember if it's a beetle or what insect.
I think it's a beetle.
And the best thing to do for cutworms, there are some nematodes that you can put out that will get cutworms, but get out there in the evening with a flashlight because they tend to do most of their damage after we're all in bed in the dark. And if you have a high population of them, you could probably find something to treat them with. But if it's not a high population, just pick them out of there.
Thinking outside the box here for just a minute, if you had massive Klieg lights in the backyard and it kept it completely bright all the time, would those worms not be a problem?
Well, you need to do that research, right?
We'll set them up
in your yard.
Yeah, my neighbors would love that. They hate me already. I don't think it's a good idea, frankly.
Although it would probably throw the photo period off on a bunch of other plants
if
they did that.
Yeah.
You don't want to be accused of throwing the photo period off of a bunch of other
plants. We used to put little collars around plants, too.
Yeah, the collars will help. Are these like larger size Swiss chard or little ones?
They're sort of medium-sized, but they haven't been allowed to get larger because the cutworms keep killing them off.
Yeah, so a little diatomaceous earth is another thing.
What'd you say, Greg?
Well, some of the physical barriers. So diatomaceous earth is a dust. You know, it's basically little diatoms that you could apply around them. It is going to rain tonight, of course, and then Saturday. So you know you'll have to reapply possibly, but that kind of thing can certainly help.
What a diatomaceous earth does is it's a sharp powder. Yep. And not sharp to us, but sharp to the insect.
That's right, yeah.
And any soft-bodied insect, it sort of cuts it up.
It doesn't like to crawl on it. It'll avoid the area or damage it.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's organic.
And as Bob mentioned, the little collars.
Collars.
You know, just like
we used to do that with
newspaper.
Our tomato plants.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just, even a soup can open on both ends, and you kind of put it around it.
Yep.
Or a tar paper collar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I just I never had them with my beets or chard. Yeah. They already killed off a lot of my pole beans, too, which is amazing. But
you know, I would get out there at night because sometimes it's not what we think it is, and it may mimic cutworm damage, but it might actually be something else. So to be out there around dusk would be good.
And you're seeing them? You're seeing them?
I haven't seen a single cutworm.
Yeah. So the other possibility is slugs.
Slugs.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I have a lot of slugs, and I know the kind of damage they do.
Okay. Or voles.
What about voles? Yeah.
Yeah, it might be voles.
Voles.
Possibly. Yeah.
That would be bad. Well, Kit, you want to follow up very quickly, and then we'll move on? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, so they don't necessarily eat the leaves, or not immediately anyway. They just they just go right through the stems of the plants, plants fall.
That almost does make me think
voles. I would think a vole would eat whatever it was.
Not always.
Voles are often described as little lumberjacks.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They cut down things, and then they walk away. They leave it lying there.
Okay. Oh,
interesting.
All right, huh?
And they produce dozens and dozens of young every year. Tremendous.
Oh God! Yeah.
Reproductive capability.
Will I see holes in my garden? Do you have vole holes or whatever, or
sometimes
or nearby?
Sometimes, nearby. Like they look like sort of chipmunk holes or sort. Not the mounds, you know, that people say. I know you sounds like you know this, but not the mounds of soil that you would associate with a mole.
Yeah.
A vole would have like more of a chipmunk hole, and sometimes a little bit off of the garden. Not,
yeah, they can
travel
5 or 10 or 15 feet. Yeah. Anyway.
Really, that far?
Oh, yeah. Further than that. Yeah. And if you have any like wooden baseboards, like a raised bed or anything like that, they'll run along the edges of that.
They love stone walls
or a messy compost pile.
So they'll go 15 feet from the hole to the
as long as it's cover. They
it's
don't
like a
to
big
run.
Mouse. They can travel.
So you need is a ground penetrating radar set, and then you can you can map the tunnels, right?
Yeah, the show is still deteriorating.
I know.
Yeah. So
it's time to retire, right?
Put out a couple mouse traps.
Mouse traps. Yep.
Yeah, put out a couple mouse traps, and you might find out it's a vole instead. Yeah.
This email from Diane in North Adams. I live in North Adams, so stipulated, and didn't get my tomato plants until June 15th this year. I figured it'd be okay, but the weirdest summer had other ideas, so I'm finally getting a few tomatoes ripening. They're not even getting very big. I bought them at a private plant sale, and they were labeled as big boys. They get full sun from about 10 in the morning until sunset. Are they doomed? I'm about ready to pull the plants out and just forget the whole thing. I'll get my tomatoes at the farmer's market on Saturday.
Well, it's always good for you to get tomatoes at a farmer's market, but they're not doomed by any means. Just let them keep going. I mean, we've still got probably another month before we have to worry about a frost.
Yeah, definitely, if the fruit has formed, a little irrigation will allow the plants to produce, to ripen those, to grow those tomatoes a little bit more.
They don't inconsistent moisture. They like to have fairly consistent moisture.
That's
if
right.
it gets dry and wet and dry and wet, they're not happy.
Yeah, and if you haven't been fertilizing them through the summer combined with inconsistent moisture, I've seen a lot of containerized tomato plants that look pretty yellow at this time of year, and those aren't going to produce a whole lot.
All right, we only have a couple of minutes here before the next break. Number is 800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question for our crew. This email came to voxpop@wamc.org. 2 minutes on this one, people. John writes in, "We're building a new house in the Albany County Hilltowns. We're hoping not to have to mow the grass. You and me both. We don't want the regular old grass lawn. We have a lot of ferns that are on the property, but about an acre or so has been ripped up. Now it's just barren where there was once maple tree, beech trees, several varieties of ferns. I've heard of people maybe using clover or thyme, but which varieties? There's a certain variety of thyme that I see in certain lawns. Seems like a good ground cover, grows very low and tight. Any recommendations? We have 2 minutes.
Well, white clover, certainly an option.
I mean, if you're going to grow something as a lawn, it's a nice sunny location, white clover will certainly be the choice when it comes to clover. If this is still in part sun, there's still some larger trees around, those ferns you were talking about could also be reestablished. They may actually come up on their own, and if you just wait a little bit.
And we were talking before the show, there are grasses that don't grow very high, called shortcut or lomo.
Really?
If you look them up, you can find them online. But they're designed to be planted as a lawn, but not have to be mowed.
That's amazing.
And if you're trying to create sort of something similar to that clover, but more of a grass look, there are also sedges that can. These would all be somewhat clumping, but you plant them in mass, and they will be a lawn-like thing without having to mow. And these are little sedges. Some of the smaller grasses, there's a thing called purple love grass that works well. There's a short thing called spirabilis or prairie drop seed. These are all little grasses that can work in mass if you're interested in creating
that's
that.
That's very
similar
interesting.
To what the ferns could do, some short, Christmas fern or maidenhair fern if it's a shadier spot.
Yeah, it's got to be a little shady for that.
I love ferns, though. They grow
grasses
wild
for the sun, ferns for the shade. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break here. And then, of course, you could use AstroTurf, right? Just get
you
some.
Sure could.
You don't want to do that.
No, you don't want it. Why? What happens?
Oh, bad stuff.
Okay.
Bad stuff.
Really? Yeah. All right. Well, let's just take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Down at JJ's, Anson Funderburg and the Rockets here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Delilah Riggs from the Berry Patch bestowing melons on all of us. And let's see, who did I miss? Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery as well. Great to have you back
after all this
time. Well, the watermelon, Delilah. The little mini watermelon, very, very good.
We do 4 different varieties of seedless watermelons. So you can get one from about 2 pounds in size to about 12 to 14 pounds in size.
So you get a biggie,
yeah. Yeah.
When did the seedless thing start? I mean, it used to be fun as a kid to just spit out the black seeds, right? Am I right?
Remember
absolutely.
It.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's your
yeah.
sister or brother.
Or anyone nearby.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I was thinking about that on the way in, too. Just when did they become so popular? And I would say in the 1980s, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s. I was doing a lot of research with different varieties and figuring out what worked best in upstate New York. So it's probably the 80s.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Now,
I remember them as a kid. It was like, oh my God, it's a seedless watermelon. It was like something new.
Yeah.
I'm not an aficionado of watermelons, but is there a qualitative difference in the taste between a seedless and a seeded?
It depends who you talk to. I think there is. And part of that is physiologically, since the plant is not having to put energy into producing seeds, it produces more sugar. So seedless watermelons tend to be sweeter than seeded.
Have you tested this theory?
Not lately.
Okay, fair enough. 800-348-2551. We'll go back to the phones in a minute. These orange ones, they're different. These have a different taste to me. They almost have almost a savory taste. What are those?
These are the same cantaloupes that we had 2 weeks ago.
Really? What are they called?
Sugar Cube and Orangina.
Huh. That's maybe just a different, they've been sitting longer or they're ripening or?
I think it's having them right after eating watermelon.
You might be right. I should have had a palate cleanser. Let's go to Great Barrington and Elizabeth is on the line. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hi there.
Hello.
We have apple trees that are losing their leaves and a cherry tree that is totally naked.
Yeah.
And there are black spots on the leaves. Is this a fungus or is it just early fall?
Well, it's fungal.
It's a fungus called black spot.
Yeah, and on the sense of the and on the sense of the apple, it's apple scab.
Apples.
So you've got probably both rolling in there.
Which is entirely normal this year because we're talking about the wet spring.
Yep, and it you know, again, like we said before, we're seeing it on, you know, crab apples for sure. Apples, we're seeing it on definitely lilacs. We're seeing it on maples. Tar spot has gone, you know, ballistic this year. I've never seen tar spot quite as crazy.
And then the dry weather, you know, allows the leaves to finish a little early, so they're dropping because of the drought as well.
Mm. Yes. And that's making them go a little faster as well. But
now, you guys know more about this than I do, but a lot of the apples that we get for eating are from the West Coast, from Washington and the like. And my understanding is that it's much drier in the air, not the humidity out there.
So I think that's correct. It's
that
a drier
is definitely
air.
Correct.
The trees do better because they don't have to deal with these fungal.
And the grapes do better, too,
grapes.
For the same reasons. Yeah,
because
it's a drier air.
They're grown on the east side of the Cascades.
The mountains.
So it's much more of a desert-type climate.
High desert. Yeah.
Right, because the Cascade Mountain Range traps the moisture on the ones on the west side. And then on the other side,
so
it's
both
a lot
of
drier.
These trees for this person are probably fine, have set
fine.
Buds for next year already. It's just fall has come early. If they're kind of younger, fairly recently installed fruit trees, they certainly could, as we've been mentioning, use some irrigation right now. And as we go into fall, if we don't get a lot of rain, a good thorough watering would be helpful.
Yeah, plants should go into the winter hydrated. They should have enough water. You know, you feel like you're crazy in October and November sometimes watering, but you should, particularly with newer plants.
Yep, they're storing a lot of that water for next year, and they're taking it in. You know, they've been taking it in. They're taking it in through this entire month.
And it never hurts to rake up any leaves, any of the infected leaves that have fallen, get those raked up and disposed off-site so that you don't have the fungus just sitting right under the tree for next
spring. That's right. The inoculum will be there for next year. Are you going to get rid of that disease by doing it? No. Is it going to reduce the amount of the infection? Yes. And, you know, don't compost them.
Okay, Elizabeth?
What about feeding it some coffee grounds?
Well, you know, I always caution people with that because it coffee grounds can affect pH to a degree. So if you're, you know, I don't think that coffee grounds is going to help the situation, you know, that we're talking about.
Just put
about.
It in your compost. Yeah.
Add
it to the compost.
That's great in compost.
Create, you know, if you don't already have it, creating a mulched area around each tree so that the trunk of the tree is not going into the lawn, that there's, you know, a 3-foot, maybe 4-foot if you want to get you know, a little job done of all of the sod or grass or weeds around the tree removed, and then an application of compost or some kind of mulching material goes a long way to sort of maintaining the health of the tree and keeping it more vigorous as you go through summer.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for that. Remember, we were talking at the beginning of the show about poison ivy.
Yep.
Cheryl writes in the wild, poison ivy is often accompanied by a plant named jewelweed.
Yep.
It has a pretty yellow-orange flower. I've found that if I do touch poison ivy, I'll break the stem of jewelweed and apply the gel to my skin, and I don't end up with the irritating symptoms of poison ivy. It's worked for our family on many occasions. Anybody hear of that?
That's correct.
Definitely heard of jewelweed for any kind of bug bites and kind of skin irritation in general.
Yeah, and if you have that rash, I mean, it's not going to get rid of the oil. But what it will do is if you get the rash, it will actually be, it can help. And some people say it actually does, like, you know, help to get rid of it quicker. And then other folks, you hear some contradictory type stuff, but it certainly won't hurt.
All right, John, go ahead, Delilah.
I was just going to say, and jewelweed is a great attractant for pollinators and hummingbirds. We have the hummingbirds at our place every night feeding on the jewelweed.
It's a cool plant.
All right, John writes in addition to my decrepit lilac, a Montmorency cherry tree has been getting about 20% yellow leaves that fall off every year. Would the same fungicide work on both it and the lilac? They're pretty close to each other, though the diseases seem to be manifesting differently.
Yeah,
I think they actually would. As we mentioned, I think, copper sulfate before, which very well may cover both, but they all have labels. They all list the various diseases that they would control, so it'd be good to just cross-reference that.
Okay. Let's go back to our phone lines. Gregory is in Kingston. Gregory, your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to talk about if someone could talk about the lantern flies that we're getting now. I see them here in Kingston and far away from here also as well. what they are looking to eat and how to deal with them.
Okay. So that's a problem. So
their favorite tree is that thing called Tree of Heaven, which is, you know, an invasive plant that has working its way north as well. And so that's what they're going to be feeding on most of the time. They can affect other trees, though. I know maples and grapes are sort of high on the list.
Yeah, grapes are pretty high on the list.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're pretty easy to kill. So if you are finding that you have some in your yard and they're especially the immature, instars, the juveniles, killing those with some kind of product, there's probably some pretty benign organic products that would work well on those.
And how do you apply? You're talking about a spray or something?
Yeah, so if they're...
Because I tried killing them, and they're pretty hard to kill. They can jump like about a yard.
Yeah, I'm talking...
Even the little ones.
I would be talking about a spray. I don't... You know, we, so far in Berkshire County, we don't see them.
Yeah,
so
we
I
have don't not see
been
them. Up
yeah, on we haven't yet. Seen them yet either. It will
be just probably a matter of
time. My neighbors have them. My brother's down in Westchester County. He's got them.
Yeah, they're coming.
There's definitely a lot of information at the Extension Services, both probably Cornell, and I know UMass has been talking about it, Connecticut as well. So you should be able to find
some. Look out, they're coming.
Yeah, man. Gregory, thanks for the call. This is from Liz. Liz says, I have a new service berry, but something's eating the leaves. New leaves are sprouting. How can I help them and protect them? What's doing this?
Well, that's in the apple family, so anything that goes after apples or roses will usually go after them.
Which is quite a few things.
And again,
that's a lot of things.
Yeah, here we are. It's September.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it.
Leaves are going to finish off as long as the plant is healthy and has started to set buds. And I know we're sort of broken record about the regular watering schedule is happening, then it's really not so much something you have to worry about at this point.
Most of the energy storage that a plant's going to do is already done. So if they completely lose their leaves this time of year, no big deal.
Yeah, which is why a lot of these sort of pathogens that are defoliating plants right now, we keep saying they're not, you know, they're more or less benign because they're falling off kind of at a time when they would fall off anyway. Yeah, so something at this time of year, not really too concerned. Something that defoliates in spring right after the leaves came out and the plant used a bunch of energy to put those leaves out, that's going to be way
if
more catastrophic.
If it's there in April, May, and June, we got an issue.
We got much more of an issue. But this time of year, we're really not too concerned.
All right. Candy writes in, my Coosa dogwoods have peeling bark on their trunks. Otherwise, they look healthy. Why is that funny?
Because that's an aesthetic attribute. People... them for
it's called
one of
they have of an the exfoliating bark.
Yep, kind of like you see with birches. River birch have exfoliating bark, and lace bark pine
it's
have
part
these
of the charm.
Really cool.
It's okay.
It's all right.
Yep.
Okay.
The darker patches, as they mature, flake off, and when they do that, they leave a lighter undertone.
It
and those
looks
lighter
pretty dramatic.
It kind of camouflages in a little bit of a way. I think the Coosa bark is really cool, though.
It's a
great
tree.
Sell point, too. But it's cool. It's definitely neat.
Candy has a second question. With the drought we're having in Western Mass, is it okay to transplant anything?
That's
not
a great
dry.
Question. That's a great question. So if you're irrigating,
if you're irrigating,
right, and you want to move your peonies or your iris or any herbaceous thing, this is a great time to do it. It's not a bad time to start moving evergreens. We talked about all these deciduous things, these cherries and service berries. If normally you're waiting for a frost to sort of slow them down, but if they're little, you could still move. You could move them now, but waiting until the weather's a little cooler. Typically, on those
the general rule of thumb is if it's a plant that loses its leaves, don't move it when it has leaves.
If you can wait, that's
leaves.
A great rule of thumb because it's basically dormant. You're going to have the leaves
either in the fall or
in
the spring,
plant.
Depending upon what it is.
Yep. But if you are irrigating and you know you're willing to keep watering it after you move it, it certainly could be done. We've done that with peonies recently at the Arboretum, and we had
a lot of perennials died off at this point anyway. Yep. They're almost dormant.
Definitely a great time to do some or start to plan this month perennial garden renovation. Dividing. Mm. Lots of things because we have plenty of warm weather for them to reroot and reestablish again with some of that watering if it doesn't rain.
Speaking of leaves, let's go to Martha in Berlin. Martha, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a hillside that has trees that were planted in, we think, the 30s. There were white pines, I think, that were planted by the CCC, and then Other trees have moved into that, and my son found a stand of oaks, and he said that they've lost all their leaves, and he thinks they're dead, and we don't know why they would have lost their leaves this early, because normally oaks hang on to their leaves until the bitter end of fall.
Yeah,
that's correct.
So
yeah.
Is there something that's going after oaks?
So, you know, it could be a few things.
Go ahead.
I'm in eastern Rensselaer County.
Right.
Yeah, it could be a few things. It could be, I know oaks in general have been getting defoliated, you know, kind of a lot of years in a row with the spongy moth. And then we've also had a lot of droughts the last few years, and the drought isn't helping a lot of these oaks either. There is a fungus disease called oak wilt, which is a possibility. But a lot of the oaks that I have seen that are not doing so well, they're not oak wilt related. It's more environmental, you know. Constant defoliation over a period of time plus drought equals not, you know, not good. So, you know, you're saying it was, I believe you said it was up on a ridge, correct?
Martha?
It's on a hill behind my house. Yep, so, it just goes up and up.
So it's,
I'm at 1,200 feet elevation, so it's higher than my house.
Right, so it's a drier site.
It's dry.
And you know, those are the ones that I see affected more than, you know, the ones that are in a more wet
basically spot. Got to wait till next year and see if they leaf out before you decide whether they're dead.
Did they leaf out this year in June and July? Did they have leaves on them?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. That because I don't go
probably
that
not
far up the hill. He's been going up the hill because he's been finding maple trees to tap.
Okay.
And so he does that in his little, you know, motorized vehicle.
Okay.
And cool. I don't go up there.
Okay, so you know, they could have been dead for, you know, it could have been happening over a period of time, you know, so we would like to know that, you know, information. But next year, you know, take a look and, you know, if it is oak wilt, it could be a problem. But like I said, a lot of the oaks I've seen that are not doing so well.
Regardless, at this point, there's probably nothing you're going to do about it. If they're still alive next year, good, but you're not going to be able to water them. You're not going to spray them.
All right.
No, they're too far away to do that. So he should just leave them and see if they leaf out next year?
Yeah, if there are other oaks that are nearby, you know, so, you know, if you look at the pattern, you know, you find your cluster of dead oaks, and then if it was something that was not so much environmental but more like a fungal problem, like an oak wilt, then you would start to see that move. It wouldn't just stay in one spot. So as long as you had other oaks, then you would see, and when it is oak wilt, it kind of almost all the leaves go almost all at once. So it's not like a slow decline, like some dead branches or some top decline. It's like all of a sudden a healthy oak goes from green to brown.
All right, Martha, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551, is it? Okay, I'm about done. We have 1 minute to go. Let's go to Karen in Clifton Park. Karen, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling about my peonies. They look healthy, except that all the leaves have these black blotches, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, peonies can get little black blotches if there's still a lot of green. That's not an unusual thing, like we've been talking about with a lot of other plants. So not a lot to do at this point. Certainly, as we get into later in the season, they can have a nice fall color, but if you don't want to wait too much longer in the next 3 or 4 weeks, you can remove that foliage. Just take it away.
Back, yeah. It's the same thing we've been talking about. It's fungal.
But I was wondering, is that also a fungal disease?
Yes.
It is also a fungal disease, which, you know, there's things happen. It's the end of the season. If your plants lasted this long and look great, you're all set.
Okay. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much. And Dale Isla Riggs, the berry patch, whatever this very pale melon is.
The canary.
It's amazing. So that, do you have that over there now?
I have it at the farmer's market, the farm stand, because we only have high school and college kids that work for us, and they're all back at school.
Child
we
labor.
Are back
Perfect.
To the honor system at the farm store, but we'll be at the Troy market.
You're a trusting soul. How do people find you?
TheBerryPatch.net.
Okay. Fred Bregley of the Landis Arboretum.
Yep. It's at 174 on Lape Road in Esperance, New York. And the website's LandisArboretum.org. Our plant sales this weekend, 10 to 4, Saturday, Sunday.
And that's info on that on the web, too.
And that's everything's on the website for that.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. WardsNursery.com.
And Bob Graves, Fadigan's Nursery.
1140 Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway. Near the Airport Road in Latham, New York.
Fine work today, people. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Support comes from the Roots Up, the hemp division of Harney & Sons Tea, now offering a variety of natural broad-spectrum CBD infusions handcrafted in New York. TheHempDivision.com for details. And Legal Aid Society of Northeastern New York, providing legal services with 6 offices in 16 counties. LASNNY.org for registration. Thanks again to Fred, Bob, Greg, and Dale Isla for being here. Thank you for listening. Terrific calls. Sorry if we didn't get to yours or your email. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. No yawning over there, Zach. This was very exciting, and you know it. Thanks to Susie Checkeye, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy, it's Food Friday, we'll spend yet more quality time with the one and only Rocco DeFazio. So we'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.